Welcome back to the Power Hour. 33 minutes after the hour. So glad that you guys have joined us. We're talking to our next guest, and he has an interesting story. He's interesting himself, and I've got a chance to know him. I've admired him from afar for a while. I've got a chance to know him personally and his work that he's doing. It's Paul Preston. Paul Preston from Agenda21Radio.news. Agenda21Radio.news. And he, of course, as the name suggests, he is an expert in Agenda 21, climate, the UN control grid over our nation, or the takeover, I should say. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. I guess in a way it is. We're going to talk about something a lot more personal to him, the Oroville Dam. The Oroville Dam earlier this year, as you know, came national attention, the largest dam in America, if not the world. Maybe Paul can confirm that. The spillway began to break, and people began to be evacuated. Paul was one of those people in Yuba City, in the cities below the dam that was evacuated. The story has taken a turn. And it's either a very concerning story and something that needs to be paid attention to, or something even more nefarious. We don't know. But an inside source from the department from the area has raised some alarm. And we'd like to get the story right here from Paul Preston. Paul, so glad to have you on the Power Hour this morning.
Well, thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes, 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 it is to have you, and thank you for taking the time. Now, tell us a little bit about your relationship to Oroville Dam. I know you live underneath it, and kind of your experience and what you know about the dam in general.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on. Like I said, and I live about 30 miles south of the dam. I'm well in what's known as an inundation zone. On the night of February 12th, I had not escaped from my house. I, you know, bad timing, and just didn't get enough word to actually make the escape, as which was called for by the Butte County Sheriff, Corey Honey. Not a mistake on his part, but I just didn't get a chance to get out. And had he not stepped in and called for the evacuation, had there not been some quick-thinking people, I would not be speaking to you today, as well as maybe 200,000 other Californians who would have died that night, and maybe as many as a million Californians all the way down to Sacramento would have died. And that's no joke. That is no joke. That's just a fact of life. It was an absolute miracle that the sheriff at the time, who was part of an emergency command team, actually he was leading the team, was made aware of the problem at the dam and how bad and how serious it got. Now, many of your listeners probably remember that on February 7th, it was reported that there was quite a huge hole in the main spillway at Oroville Dam. And this is not a small dam. It's one of the largest earthen-filled dams in the world. It has 3.5 million cubic acres of water behind it. It's just an enormous reservoir back there. It supports the water that comes in from the Three Forks of the Feather River, one of the largest watersheds in America. It's just, it services water. About 40% of the water from this area goes to Southern California. So the loss of this dam would have impacted people down in Southern California as well. And, you know, comparison to the United States, it's the tallest earthen-filled dam in the United States. It's one of the top three tall ones. It's just enormous. It's 6,000 feet across the dam. It's over a mile wide. And you have another portion of the dam, the main spillway and the emergency spillway, which extends further up north. What happened on February 7th, though, is that they lost a large chunk of concrete because of the, as it's looking now, bad design and bad materials were used inside the spillway. But the negligence that was showed, because what happened up until that moment, for at least the past 12 years leading into this, there was absolutely no repairing of major critical infrastructure problems on the dam. It was left neglected even after report after report after report. In fact, it was not even properly licensed to be an operational dam. It was going on provisional licenses from year in to year out. It was supposed to be on a 50-year cycle of licensing, and they couldn't even get that because the dam was in such bad repair, and even today remains in very, very bad disrepair. Of course, they're trying to repair some things right now, but it is absolutely a ticking time bomb. And that particular night, it was not just a ticking time bomb. It was a bomb set to go. And I can kind of, you know, go into all that stuff very quickly for everybody to understand. But my involvement with the dam came in as I was covering it from Agenda 21 Radio. And I also used to work up there as a school administrator. I was the principal of one of the high schools right at the base of the dam. Especially, I was the principal on September 11, 2001. And I can remember coming into the school, and I had hysterical teachers. Just they were hysterical because they, you know, they saw everything with the Twin Trade Towers and so on. And what they were hysterical was about was that the terrorists were going to take down the dam, Oroville Dam. And we sat literally within 3 miles of it downstream. We would have been wiped out had something gone off. And I can remember making the statement to them. I said, look, the only way this dam would ever come down is if the terrorists got a hold of nuclear weapons and blow it up. And now fast forward to living here in under the shadow of the dam for so many years that I started covering it on Agenda 21 radio as soon as the blowout happened on the 7th. And I've known about the dam. I've hiked around the dam. I've boated on the dam. It's just been part of the routine as living in this area. And so when I went up there, my first day up there was on February 11th. I had made a speech in Chico to the Republican Women's, and I told them, I said, I'm going to the dam to see what this big story is all about. So I had access, actually, to the very top of the dam. I got to drive across the dam, and I actually went out there at the very end of the dam to look at the emergency spillway, because that was the big show at that point. The main spillway, which had already been blown up, they shut down. They just didn't pass any water over it. But the emergency spillway, they allowed water for the very first time in the dam's 50-plus year history to cascade over what's called the OG weir of the emergency spillway. And that I looked at that and I said to myself, this is not shaping up to be very good, because the water was already overtopping there at that point. In dam talk, parlance, if you will, when a dam overtops, it becomes a critical emergency situation. It's an indicator of dam failure, and soon to be complete dam failure. So I stood there, and I looked at the water going down, and I could actually see erosion right in front of my face. This is at about noontime on the 11th. And I turned around, and I looked at that pool of water in that reservoir and saw how massive it was, and I said, you know, there's real trouble ahead. And I was very alarmed. In fact, I walked over, and I said to one of the construction, there were construction workers there that were starting to respond to the broken part of the spillway, and I said to them, why are we not using water going over the main spillway right now? And they looked at me, and this is no joke. One of them said, well, the reason why is that the Department of Water Resources is worried about destruction of salmon habitat in the Feather River further downstream. I said, for that reason, they're not passing water over the main spillway. And they said, yes. So I drove off and I went home and I started doing a lot of research on this. I'm deep into the research. I end up on the 12th, now 12, 14, actually about 18 hours after I leave, there was an evacuation order that was put out by the sheriff. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't even know about it. I was actually in the studio on KMYC 1410, which is out in the middle of the country. And I got in my car and I drove home, and I couldn't understand why there were so many cars going in the opposite direction of where I was driving. So I get home and I'm putzing around the house and not really thinking too much. And all of a sudden I get a text. I said, where are you at? And I said, I'm at home. Why haven't you evacuated? I'm like, well, I didn't know. And the sheriff hours earlier had issued an evacuation order. I just didn't hear it. Like a lot of other people, we didn't hear it. But the real story is, why did the sheriff call for an evacuation? And this is where it's very, very telling, and in my opinion, very, very dangerous, and people need to hear this very clearly about what happened.
Paul, before we go a little further, a couple of questions real quick to set the stage to understand and to help me understand, too. You said it's an earthen-filled dam.
Correct.
As opposed to like a concrete dam at Hoover Dam in Las
Shasta
Vegas.
Shasta and all that stuff, right.
Yes, tell us a little bit about the difference of that and the vulnerability of the dam.
Well, the dam, being an earthen-filled dam, was built from all the tailings from the Gold Rush days. They brought in all these dredges and stuff like that, like you see on Gold Rush, the show. And they started dredging up the rock at the bottom of the rivers, and they got all this washed rock from the rivers. And there's three grades of it. There's small, medium, and large. And so they realized that they had so much massive amounts of it, they could make a dam out of all the stuff that's left over. In fact, there's so much more, they could make two or three dams. That's how much rock is out there. So they started processing the rock, and a couple of things when they structured the dam to build it, there's a concrete core in it, there's a clay core, and then there's this rock in different grades that's involved with the making of the actual dam itself. And they didn't fracture the rock, which is important. When you're doing an earth-filled dam and you got rock, you should always fracture it, because a fractured rock is not a smooth stone rock, which is what they have up there. And what it does is it allows better grip and holding power for the rocks to actually hold on to one, bond and adhere to one another. And if you use concrete mixed with that, that's even more important. In fact, anytime you mix concrete together or cement together with rock and aggregate, it's always fractured rock. That's because it adheres tighter to the fracture points. And this particular dam was made with that kind of combination, not with concrete, not with solid concrete. So it's a much more vulnerable to liquefaction of certain portions of the dam. This one is so immense, though, you know, it's a highly improbable, one would think, that it would just go on its own. Now, there's been a number of dam failures that have occurred, one of them being the most notable, the Teton dam failure that occurred, and it was made actually by a company called Kiewit Construction Company. That was back in 1976. The dam failed. It was actually being filled for the very first time, and it failed. It failed miserably, killing 11 people and inundating 300 square miles of Idaho. One of the dams that also failed is the St. Francis Dam in Los Angeles, killed several hundred people in the L.A. area. Sort of ended the career of Mr. Mulholland, who was responsible for bringing water to California. But when they built the Oroville Dam, they started construction in 1957, 1968, it was finished. Ronald Reagan actually dedicated it. It was Jerry Brown's father, Edmund G. Pat Brown, who started the construction of this Oroville Dam. And this dam stood monolithically. It has a powerhouse that's built inside of it, the Hyatt power plant, and it has six turbines that turn all the time. It's got tubes and all this other stuff. It also has some linkage and affiliation with Lawrence Livermore. Now, when you mention Lawrence Livermore, you mention nuclear things, because they'd have several laboratories down there that were unbeknownst to most people until this dam incident. And, of course, this has become a big sense of a problem for people in terms of secrecy. They want to try and keep as much secret things going on about this dam and about the structure of it. So that's why they haven't been so forthcoming with a lot of their records and so on. But on the 12th, that dam was set for failure. And what had happened was that there was a ever-rising amount of water that was coming in from the watershed behind it, dumping into the reservoir. The water was rising very quickly, and there was this decision, because the main spillway was broken, to allow water to go up over the emergency spillway, thinking that, and again, I got several confirmations on this from people at the time, that their thinking was to save the salmon downstream and not care about the humans.
Oh, my word. Paul, I cannot get off that. That's the second time you brought that up. A river downstream, there's about to be a feather lake downstream. What are they worried about a river for?
Well, that was a lot. You know, this is a radical environmentalist group that we live in. You know, Jerry Brown's a rabid environmentalist. Jerry Brown, his belief system is that all rivers should never have dams in them. He's always advocating tearing down and blowing up dams. And this is something that came from Bruce Babbitt and John Podesta during the Clinton era, and Jerry Brown has never let go of that. We have dams being torn down all around the western United States, all around the world. This is all part of the Agenda 21 plan. And as you know, Jerry Brown was part of the 2030 Paris Accord big time. He just went off to China just the other day to sign, apparently against a federal law, to sign an agreement for climate, which... everybody's saying it's non-binding, but the bottom line is he actually did go off. He thinks of himself as the president of California, and he's not going to listen anymore. And you can see a lot of things happening in the legislature where they're actually going to try and, I think, separate California from the nation. But on that particular night on the 12th, the sheriff became informed about some problems at the dam, and so he goes to the dam. He wasn't planning to go to the dam. No one called him from the dam to go, but he heard some things. And there's a story behind that. We're going to come out with that. But he heard some things. So he goes to the dam on a Sunday afternoon thinking, well, I haven't heard anything, but I'm hearing some things from my people, my deputies, so I'm going to go check it out. So he goes to the dam, and he goes into the office there on Glen Boulevard and so on. And he's supposed to be the incident commander. So he's got a unified command system that's got, the county fire, it's got the DWR, it's got the California people, it's got a whole wide range of people that report to him because he's the ultimate law enforcement officer in the county. And so he goes in and he's walking around the office there and nobody's saying anything to him. There's no reason for concern. So he says, well, I'm going to go home, you know, nothing going on here. And so as he's walking out, he passes by one of the office rooms and he looks in and he sees a man sitting there with a picture in front of him and he's got his head in his hands and he's kind of shaking his head a little bit. And so he steps in the door. He sees this engineer distressed. So he steps in the door and a woman that was standing right next to him says to him, does the sheriff know about this yet? And so that prompted him, hello, hello. So here I am, just so happened to be. And I'm just by happenstance, he's there, right? And he hears this. So these two convene with some other people and go in a room in an office and they meet for about 15, 20 minutes. And they come out and they say, well, yeah, we have this problem. And of course, as I'm hearing all this stuff and I'm hearing from sources that were there at the time in that room, actually, and other people during the 12th and the 13th and 14th and continuation of contacts and sources that I know and personal friends and so on, the picture is starting to look rather bleak in terms of understanding about why they wouldn't have informed the sheriff about what I'm going to tell you. So the sheriff looks at all this stuff and he says, well, what do we have here? And the guy says, well, what we have here is a picture of the water and the weir, and we're seeing that there's erosion taking place in front of the OG weir on the emergency spillway. And he goes, really? He goes, how is that erosion working? He says, well, it's what's called head cutting. It's working its way back towards the weir. And what's happening is that ultimately that's going to head cut and cause that weir to fail. And he says, well, how fast is it going? It's going about 30 feet an hour. He says, so when it fails, what will happen? The dam will lose about a third of the top of it. The water will come down, and it will inundate many of the towns and the communities, and it will cause large loss of life. And he goes, gee, I think maybe I better call an emergency here and tell everybody. And so he says, how many feet do we have before it gets to the OG weir? And they look up at him, and they say, 30 feet.
Okay. Just to recap, we got about a minute or so before break. This is the night of the 12th. He comes around, happens to hear this conversation, gets in on it. They said, oh, by the way, in about an hour, this whole thing's going to fail.
Yep.
Basically.
Yep.
And so that's where the evacuation came from.
The
emergency spillway is going, not the main spillway, because they're worried about salmon eggs down in the Feather River, which is about to become the biggest lake in California there, or one of the biggest, really.
Soon. It would become the biggest lake in the nation.
We'll be back after this 3-minute break with Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio.News. Orville Dam. Wow. Mackenzie? Welcome back to the Power Hour. 51 minutes after the hour, our final, or 54 minutes, excuse me, minutes after the hour. We're at our final segment with Paul Preston telling really a compelling story that he backtracked. He's broken the story by contacts who were there the night and in that conversation there at the dam. The Orville Dam was minutes away from becoming the biggest natural disaster we've seen since Katrina, probably. Paul Preston, why don't you continue with the end of the story? The sheriff is about to evacuate the area.
Yeah, the sheriff calls an evacuation order, and of course he has a little bit less than an hour to get the order out even before the dam, they predict, would actually fail. And so they started executing some of these emergency orders and so on. Now, some of the things that started to happen, and we know that they saved the dam ultimately, and they opened up the spillway, the main spillway, and they opened it up to about 100 CSF, that's cubic feet per second. And so they opened it up to that level and finally started to put take pressure off of the OG weir, and less water went over the weir. So it saved basically the dam at that night, but it, completely tore up the rest of the spillway down there. Now, the bigger problem is that I was getting information, because people are starting to call me now because they know I do the radio, they know this, that, and the other. And these are people that I know personally up in Oroville and some other contacts, and this is all of a sudden becoming a huge story. The big story is that down at the bottom of the dam, where you have the tube, actually the big open tube that you can drive trucks in and out of into the Hyatt Electric power plant, there was an order that went out to bring in about 30 trucks. And those 30 trucks exited the dam. And as they exited the dam, of course, the people were telling me that they were loaded with nuclear devices. Nuclear weapons is what they first told me. And I thought, nuclear weapons.
How do you know? Whoa. Who told you this? Your inside source?
Find this out? Well, we found it out from several sources that were quite concerned. Now, we since, of course, assessed the story out and gotten not just one, two, or three, numerous reports of this. But they clarified what was actually in the trucks. It wasn't nuclear weapons. They were called ADMs, Atomic Demolition Munitions. Now, when you ask the question, what is an ADM? An ADM is a device that's designed to blow up dams.
Yeah, my jaw is wide open right now.
Right, and they had as many as 60 of them.
So you're saying from your source, from what you've learned in the back, that night, basically, if
that night it was going to go,
this happened upon there, it might have, the whole thing might have went that night.
The sheriff, in my opinion, blew it for them. They were on target to blow up the dam. And it just so happens there's a green spot in the area right where they were going to do the detonation, that big, huge tube that goes in the dam. There's a huge wet spot right there. They call it the green spot. We've identified it here on Agenda 21 Radio as a possible place in which water would pour out and cause an inundation. And it's very, very clear that these demolitions, these ADM munitions, were designed to blow up that dam that night. And obviously, on this north end of the dam, you have the distraction of the spillway going over the spillway and causing the disruption there. But, you know, on the south end, which is where this is located, those munitions detonating underneath that ground, it would be like a big-time underground nuclear explosion like you saw in, you know, we were so acute to in the 50s and 60s from Nevada. It would have caused that dam to come down and inundate an area that would go south of Sacramento, killing almost 1 million people.
Paul, we got about a minute left, maybe less. Just in summary, your source told you that there were ADMs under the dam. The emergency spillway was running, not the main spillway. They finally ran the main spillway only after the sheriff basically forced their hand.
That's correct.
They were going to stop the main spillway because of a salmon.
Well, that's what they said. And naturally, it would have caused that never used before emergency spillway to fail. They knew
that. We've got to have you back on. I'm sorry that we're out of time.
That's okay.
We've got to have you back on the story and more about the Agenda 21, about these dams.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on. Paul Preston, Agenda 21 Radio.news. God bless you, Paul.
Thank you very much.